Well, thank you all for coming today. I appreciate you taking the time this morning. I'm going to talk to you about using mixed methods to examine occupational injury issues, and I'm going to do so through the lens of one of my dissertation manuscripts that was on distracted driving in commercial truck drivers. So I have no disclosures. So I'm going to lay out some information about distracted or mixed methods first, talk about some things to think about it, and I'm going to present the manuscript itself, go through that, give you the results. Then the discussion of this this talk is going to be focused on the benefits of mixed methods in this example, and then some considerations for you if you're going to think about doing mixed methods in your research. So the purpose of the talk is to describe the benefits of using mixed methods study to examine risky occupational behaviors. And the purpose of the illustrative study is to identify personal and workplace factors that affect distracted driving on the job for commercial truck drivers. So last month when I was making these slides, I went and searched the phrase mixed method in all these topic-specific journals, injury prevention, accident analysis prevention, et cetera. And you can see there's not a lot of cases, and there are only not a lot of articles, and only going back to 2001. And really, the predominance of these articles are in the last 2 years specifically. So this is something that hasn't been used very much in our field of research. The definition of mixed methods, a technical definition, talks about integrating the findings and drawing inferences using both qualitative and quantitative methods in a single program of inquiry. And the challenge then is to coherently reconcile these two research traditions. And when I say research traditions, really think about the different types of research that we see in public health. We see from the qualitative side, you've got medical anthropology and sociologic methods. Then on the quantitative side, we have biostatistical methods, and in occupational injury, we go into ergonomics and engineering methods as well. So these are two places that really come from disparate locations, and we have to bring them together coherently. The way we do that is through triangulation. Now, triangulation is not only specific to mixed methods. It comes from both qualitative and quantitative traditions. Going back to 1959, Campbell and Fisk talked about validating quantitative data. Qualitative validation isn't so much about the validity of the results in the same way, or the validity validation, in the quantitative sense, but as Maxwell and Bloor talk about here, you validate different components of your research. In mixed methods, the goal of the triangulation is to essentially supplement the weaknesses of one method with the strength of the other. And in the study that I'm going to be presenting you today, we're going to be using between method triangulation. So we're going to be looking at surveys of truck drivers and then to examine their distracted driving behaviors. But then we're also going to use interviews with external experts looking at that same topic. So it's an external between method validation and triangulation, and this serves to increase our external validity. So the way you triangulate your data serves to help with different parts of the study, and we are using this between method triangulation for the purpose of complementarity, so to elaborate and enhance and illustrate the survey data with the interview information. So as I said, this is one of my dissertation manuscripts that I have written with Keisha Pollack, my dissertation mentor, and Andrew Galen, the chair of my dissertation committee. It's currently under review at Accident Analysis and Prevention. So, study background. I think at this point we can all agree distracted driving is dangerous. It increases your risk for crash. For people who drive on the job, distracted driving then is an occupational hazard. And as you can see here, motor vehicle crash is the leading cause of occupational fatalities in the United States. This study is concerned with the decision to drive distracted. So we know from the previous literature that business drivers have more positive attitudes about distracted driving than people who drive for personal transport or for non-business purposes. Furthermore, time pressures on the job remove some of the freedom of choice or the capacity for safe decision-making, as Carradine Klein called it, whereas you and I might have freedom to decide, I don't want to pick up the phone right now while I'm driving. The occupational driver might not be able to make that choice. So the goal of this study is to understand the factors that influence decision-making for distracted drivers faced by commercial truck drivers in the U.S. And the factors that we'll be analyzing came from the theory of planned behavior. The literature told us that this would be a good place to set our framework. So this guided both our interviews and our survey. We are seeking to understand drivers' attitudes, their subjective norms, social norms, that is, who influences their decision-making, their perceived control over the decisions. And the theory says that behavioral intentions mediate the relationship between those first three items and that performance of the behavior. And so when I say in the quantitative analysis, we're testing the model. We're looking to see, does behavioral intentions mediate the other three effects? This is the layout of our mixed method study design. It's called the concurrent design and analysis. Across the top, you'll see that the qualitative data are collected, analyzed, and then we get the results. Separate from that, running parallel to it, is the quantitative data. We collected it, analyzed it, and got the results. It was only after we got the results that we synthesized the results to draw what's called a meta-inference, data analysis that we couldn't have obtained from one single method on its own. So the study methods summed up in a single slide. We have first qualitative interviews. They were semi-structured interviews with experts in truck driving safety and distracted driving. And as you can see, we only had 11 of them, but the trade-off is we were able to cover a wide range of distractions. On the other side, we have quantitative analysis of an online survey of Teamsters members. International Brotherhood of Teamsters was very helpful in making this study happen. We only looked at two distractions on the survey, but we had 277 subjects answering questions about texting on the job, and a subpopulation of that used a dispatch device on the job, so we had 153 subjects doing that. We modeled in the quantitative portion of the study, we modeled the components of the theory of planned behavior on crashes and distraction-related near crashes on the job. So that was our outcome of interest. To the qualitative results, the interview participants said that there were pros and cons to the various distractions. It's not as if driving distraction is automatically and always bad. There are some benefits that drivers could gain from driving distracted. They could finish writing their notes and hop out of the vehicle and just go right on their way rather than having to sit in their car, in their cab, right after they get to a location and then carry on with their day. And it would be up to the drivers to weigh these pros and cons. There's personal control, range of personal control over undertaking these distractions. So the more work-related distraction is, the less control that these drivers would have, according to our interview participants. Third, subjective norms or social norms. The interview participants said that managers and supervisors would by far have the biggest influence over the decision-making process for these drivers. But these managers could influence and decrease the driver's personal control by implementing and enforcing strong, clear policies about distracted driving on the job. So that's the qualitative results. Quantitative results first for the texting population, again, 277 subjects in this group. We found that intention to text mediated the relationship of perceived behavioral control and subjective norms to distraction involved near crashes, and that means that for texting, the theory of planned behavior framework was supported. For the dispatch device group, a subpopulation, we found that motivation to comply with supervisors' opinions, that is subjective norms, was associated with decreased odds of distraction involved near crash. Intentions did not mediate this relationship, so the theory of planned behavior framework was not supported. So now we go to the results synthesis after we've run our essentially two separate studies. To draw a meta-inference synthesizing these results, it's possible that drivers have varying control over decision-making depending on how work-related a distraction is. So if we were to make a recommendation to safety experts trying to intervene on distracted driving on the job, we would want to address different components of the theory of planned behavior or different components of the workplace depending on what the distraction is, the specific distraction, how work-related it is. And so it's not just one size fits all. We'll reduce all distractions on the job. So that's the summary of the study. What did we gain by using mixed methods in this case? First, we were able to use the qualitative methods to explain the discordant quantitative findings. We did not think going into our survey that work-relatedness was going to be a key variable. We did not have it in there. And the qualitative data were able to illustrate this difference, why the theory of planned behavior framework was supported in one and not in the other. If we had done this simply as a monomethod study, we would have had to run a second survey involving more questions about work-relatedness to try to elucidate this difference. We can then also judge the validity of our data using the mixed methods framework that we have. First, we have to ask, are these individual methods, have they been used in the past? Yes, they have. Second, the between method triangulation that I described before helps increase the external validity. So Howe writes that classic quantitative experimentation trades external for internal validity. But by adding this interview component, the qualitative data help raise that external validity that we lost by simply conducting the internal or the quantitative analysis. And finally, the concurrent study design contributes to validity of the meta-inference. So both of these surveys, or both of these studies, were essentially run in parallel to one another. And in some mixed methods designs, you will have crossing over of the data, and you will use one method to influence the other as you go along. In this case, both sets of data were analyzed, both results were obtained, and then we got to the end and then synthesized those results. So once, I've got to stop doing that. Once we get to, keep my hand down, once we get to the result synthesis and the meta-inference, neither side has been impacting the other. So we have more confidence about the meta-inference that we draw. If you're going to think about doing mixed method studies, there's some things that you should think about as well. It's not easy to conduct such a study. Your study team should be ready to collect and analyze both types of data. And remember that data collection is just as important as the data analysis step. So putting an open-ended question on the end of your survey does not mean that you're collecting qualitative data. You've sampled that group quantitatively. That is not the same thing. You might use a qualitative method to analyze that, but that's not a qualitative analysis. Don't assume that a mixed method study is automatically going to be better. Sometimes you're just going to need to have to do statistical analysis or an embedded research project. You can't always replace good mono method studies with mixed methods, but it is sometimes possible. And finally, be sure that you design all the components before you start the data collection. So how compatible are these data going to be? How are the interviews and your surveys going to mix? How are you going to be getting your qualitative data to validly triangulate with your other data? Consider the validity of each method. Are they valid measures for the phenomena of interest? And finally, how will triangulation occur? What will it add to your study? Doing these two studies, I had reviews on this paper, and they said, you know, you have two studies here. You could write these up as two separate papers. And it's true. We could have. But we could not have drawn the meta-inference that we did had we not done that triangulation. So think about how you're going to collect both types of data and how you're going to mix both types of data before you even start the study. So, in conclusion, mixed methods are underutilized, I would argue, in injury and occupational safety research. Key informant interviews increase the external validity for a survey of truck drivers, and concurrent design analysis and meta-inferences allowed us to see nuance in how truck drivers make decisions concerning distracted driving. So unfortunately, I'm just going to have to blow through this acknowledgments and funding slide. And I have my references as a PDF file. Come find me, and I will give it to you. But I use this one very heavily, the mixed methods reader. I have no financial stake in it, but I will sing its praises. And then references from the mixed method reader, other references. And thank you very much.
Take a couple of questions.
Thank you for the presentation. It was really interesting.
Thanks.
So I think your discussion about the advantages of doing both data collection methods concurrently was actually really intriguing to me, and I just have a question regarding that. So when I've done mixed methods, I've usually done the qualitative component first to inform the quantitative survey. And so I was wondering if anything came out of your qualitative findings that you did not think to ask about on your quantitative survey, that if you would have done it the qualitative first and then the quantitative, would have modified your survey.
So when I said it was concurrent, the designs were concurrent. We actually ran the survey, the interviews first, but we didn't use that really to, we had the survey, we knew what we were going to ask. We just needed certain components of the interviews to say, what's the correct, or, excuse me, let me back up. When conducting a theory of planned behavior kind of survey, you need to have who are the social norms, who are the reference that you're going to be talking about, what are the exact behaviors that you're going to be looking at. So we took that from the interview and used that information in the survey. But we did not modify our survey at all based on the results of the interview. So we had planned ahead of time. There's definitely ways, The great thing about mixed methods is you can think about it, approach it from a lot of different directions, and our choice was that we're going to run these two separately and not have them cross over. You can cross over. There are many great new mixed methods designs that involve subgroups and interviews and crossing your data. We chose not to have our interviews influence our surveys, and that was the choice of the study design. Well, yes. During the interviews, and this is part of what I was referring to earlier, we had to select the type of distractions that we were going to choose. And we asked the interview participants, what do you think, on a scale of 1 to 5, how distracting is, and then we ran through a list of 20 different distractions. And universally, texting was a 5. Every single interview participant said texting is the most distracting. Cell phone use was like 4.5, dialing a cell phone was like 4.5, and on down. So we chose that texting because it was universally seen by the interview participants as the most distracting. We chose dispatch device use because it was highly ranked by the interview participants, but it was the first occupational specific behavior. So there was cell phone use using a GPS, or cell phone use and texting, dialing a cell phone were all distracting activities, but then the first occupational specific one was that. So that was the choice that we made there. But no, we did not ask. We did not want to spoil the drivers by saying, by judging them ahead of time, do you text on the job? That might not go over well. So.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.